Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is September 4th, 2006. Our session today is entitled Music and Conversation in E-flat. Genesis, Creation in Concert, or Is It My Turn to Solo? Our presenter is Cliff Ari. Let's listen in.
For those of you who may not know me, my name is Cliff Ari. And hopefully this time Quentin is actually recording, so I don't have to start over a second time. But if I do, then I'll just repeat my name a few times. When Carol asked me if there was something that I could perhaps do this week as a session, I began to think about music and about jazz. So I thought about music and conversation in E-flat. And I thought, I'll clue you in on E-flat a little bit later, if I might. What I've done is put together just kind of an outline of some thoughts using the theme creation and covenant. And we'll start out here, and we may go like this to here, or we may improvise and go all over the place, depending upon what happens. But I'd like to, if I could, begin our time together. What do we usually say as pastors with a word of prayer? Let me start us off with some notes of prayer. I invite you to gather in the spirit of prayer. Let us pray. I have no idea where that came from, what notes came where, or why, only that it started off somewhere and ended up somewhere very differently. And the flatted third didn't seem quite appropriate, so it got raised up a half step to a major, and then it seemed to make a little more sense to me. And I guess as I look at my life, I find that quite often I have to keep changing my notes. What seems appropriate at one time may not necessarily kind of be what needs to flow. And so I have to be adaptable. I need to be improvisational. I need to be able to kind of go where the spirit leads. And maybe that is a good way of getting at the whole thing about jazz and spirit. And maybe the thing to do is to start off by defining what jazz is. Okay? So tell me, what is jazz?
Cool. Rhythmic?
Okay, jazz is... Okay, jazz is cool.
The form of
rhythmic.
Improvisational, huh?
Improvisational.
Creative.
Juxtapositions, one of my favorite words.
Oh.
I like words with X's in them. Like sax. What else is jazz?
It's music.
Cultural. I mean, I usually get it more in the black culture, at least history-wise.
Okay. Cultural, and I'll put black as short for the African-American community. Okay. We could go on, I think. Now let's go over here. What is spirit?
Well, kind of the same things.
Okay.
Improvisational.
The spirit is improvisational.
Breath.
Breath.
It moves.
It moves.
She sings.
She sings.
Wind.
Pardon me?
Wind. W-I-N-D.
I'll put that next to breath.
Right.
In good theological form. Any other thoughts?
Mystical.
Mystical. Okay, let's stop right there. We've got more down here for jazz than we do for the spirit. That's kind of unusual for a theological crowd. I find it interesting that improvisational came right at the top of spirit, at least in somebody's mind. What I'd like to do is take a look at improvisation tonight and kind of see if we can draw that link between jazz and the spirit. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to start off with a reading about a jazz musician. Goes like this. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light." And there was light, and God saw the light was good. And God separated the light from the
darkness.
God called the light day, and the darkness God called
night.
And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day, day one. Let's go through creation for just a minute. And as we do, think of this great master or mistress creator of the universe, of the cosmos, and see if you can playfully think of God as kind of a jazz improviser, if you will. Because God, out of nothingness, kind of took some of this, some of that, made light, made darkness. And on the second day, what did God make? Remember?
Separated the light from the darkness.
Well, the dome in the sky and the water. So the second day, God creates sky and water. I've got to look at my notes, too, because I always forget. And then the third day, God creates the dry land and all the vegetation upon the dry land. So God is cooking now, as we say in the jazz field. You know, God is grooving. God is riffing here. You know, God's got lights and darkness, day and night, sky and water. God's created this earth coming up. God's created the vegetation on it. And then day four comes. And then God creates some lights. The sun, the moon, the stars. Let's listen to some improvisational music. The first piece, very briefly, is called Solar Flare. Everybody hear that?
Mm-hmm. We charge the station more.
So we have some jazz musicians. Anybody know the group from this? It's a group that's from very nearby here. The group is called Oregon. And they're not usually considered to be jazzers, but they're improvisationalists and they have a jazz background. Solar flare, creation, the sun. Now let's listen to what they do with the moon that God creates. This is called Moonrise, slightly a little bit longer. So what does solar flare and moonrise evoke for you? Anything?
Well, the solar was flaring and fiery and discordant, mm-hmm. and the moon was sort of like a moonscape and quieter and
yeah.
more smooth flowing.
Yeah. Did it sound like jazz? What you think of as jazz?
No.
No, not particularly, huh? But it was pure improvisation.
Mm-hmm.
Do other musicians improvise besides jazz musicians? Just keep that in the back of your mind for a little bit as we go on. Because we've got some more days of creation. So day number five is what? Living creatures, birds, fish. And then day number six, what happens? First we have cattle.
People.
Yeah, they're down the line. First we've got cattle, then we've got creeping things, and we've got the wild animals, and then we get to humans. Now, either God is building a crescendo, or we're just last on the list. I don't know. I prefer to think crescendo myself. And then day seven, it's a day of rest. You know, even in music you have rests. You know, you kind of step back and you take a break and other musicians play and yeah, we've got a time of rest. So in creation we have this marvelous flow. The creator God, the ultimate jazz musician, weaving together all these sounds and rhythms and textures and riffs and themes and kind of improvising on them, and here we are. in creation. So now, how do we take that sense of creation, knowing that as human beings, we are created by the Creator, in the Creator's image, to co-create with the Creator? I love to tell folks that in the arts, painters do what? They paint, right? Dancers do what?
They dance.
Sculptors sculpt. But musicians play. Musicians get to play. And, you know, playfully, we take all these elements of melody and harmony and rhythm and chords and modes and scales, and we make something with them. And sometimes, you know, throughout history, music has taken some interesting turns. And sometimes we can even kind of go backwards to take a look at music and bring it to modern day. So I'd like to play you a piece. It's probably about 5 or 6 minutes, so you can sit back and listen. Think of jazz. Think of God as the ultimate jazz musician. But this is Wayne Shorter. Anybody ever heard the name Wayne Shorter? Saxophonist. He's one of the elder statesmen of jazz today. Very marvelous musician, a wonderful, wonderful human being. But this is his jazz improvisation on a 12th century carol. And see if you can recognize the tune, because you've probably sung a setting of this at some point or other. It may take me a moment to find it here. And what he does here is he does something very interesting. He sets the rhythm section in 6, and he plays in 4. So you've got this creative tension of fitting 2 time signatures together. Here it is. Starts out. Some drumming. Christmas setting. Next Chelsea's Day, turns it around into a different different kind of flowing stream. Stop that there, because I want to be able to move on. And I apologize for the sound in here, because there are so many different connections going from one wire to another to another to another. It's a little distorted, but I think you get the idea of what the music is like. Invariably, and it's happened on more than one occasion here, rather than playing at Holden, you know, somebody will come up and thank me for the music and say how much they liked it. And it's taken me years to graciously accept praise and just kind of say, you're welcome and it's my privilege. But invariably, people say, how do you do that? I mean, how do you know where to go and which notes to play and go? And especially classical musicians who are tied to a keyboard or a strings or whatever. And they just can't fathom it. What I'd like to do is read something to you. And this is my creativity Bible. I recommend this book very highly. Free Play, Improvisation in Life and Art. Stephen Nachmanovich. I was only able to bring a couple of books along with me, and of course, this was one. And you can tell, I try to read this every couple of years to get back in touch with it. But I'd like to read you a section from the introduction. And maybe this helps to answer that question a little bit. He says, I am a musician. One of the things I love best is to give totally improvised solo concerts on violin and viola. There is something energizing and challenging about being one-to-one with the audience and creating a piece of work that has both the freshness of the fleeting moment and, when everything is working, then the structural tautness and symmetry of a living organism. It can be a remarkable and often moving experience in direct communication. My experience of playing this way is that, quote, I am not doing something. It's more like following or taking dictation. This is, of course, a feeling that has been expressed many times by composers, poets, and other artists. There is the story of one of Bach's pupils asking him, Papa, how do you ever think of so many tunes? To which Bach replied, My dear child, my greatest difficulty is to avoid stepping on them when I get up in the morning. And there is the famous example of Michelangelo's theory of sculpture. The statue is already in the stone, has been in the stone since the beginning of time, and the sculptor's job is to see it and release it by carefully scraping away the excess material. William Blake, in a similar vein, writes of melting apparent surfaces away and displaying the infinite, which is hid. And so, musicians, and particularly jazz musicians, are listening and following something. Now, my son is a professional cellist, and he doesn't improvise very much, but he does some. But when I watch him play, particularly the Bach unaccompanied, you know, cello suite, I see him caught up in the music, and there are notes on the page, and he's playing the notes, but something is pulling him, leading him through this process of taking these black dots on a page and bringing it to life. My oldest daughter is a vocalist. You'll get to hear her in a minute. Same thing. When I see her singing, she becomes a different person. Her face, her countenance just becomes illuminated. She smiles. She's into it. So it doesn't matter if you're a jazz musician, a classical musician,
a bluegrass musician, dare I even say a country and western musician. I can enjoy almost any kind of music, but country and western music is not on the top of my charts. Of course, my younger brother is a country and western musician, and about a decade ago, he had the number one country and western hit in Holland. The Netherlands. That's another story. Anyway, what is it that we're listening to? In classical terms, in classical Greek mythology, it's the muse. We're listening. We're opening ourselves to the muse, the source of inspiration. I would contend spirit, Holy Spirit, could be another name for the muse, and vice versa, particularly in our acts of creation. Listening and being so caught up that we're not in control anymore. We're just following. There's a great quote in here by Stefan Grappelli, a wonderful jazz violinist who died somewhat recently. And I love this quote. It gets right down to the focus of improvisation. He says, improvisation, it is a mystery. You can write a book about it, but by the end, no one still knows what it is. When I improvise, and I'm in good form, I'm like somebody half sleeping. I even forget there are people in front of me. Great improvisers are like priests. They are thinking only of their God. Their God.
Their God.
Their God. G-O-D. Great improvisers, great musicians, great jazz musicians, when you're following, they're thinking only of their God. Now, I have a great many jazz musicians who might claim to be atheist, but I see something very spiritual happening when they play. Maybe they just don't realize it yet. What I'd like to do is to play you at least part of a song by, I think, the greatest saxophonist of all time and one of the great spiritual musicians of all time, John Coltrane. Do you know the name? Mm-hmm. I've got some other stuff that I want to play that's really deep and moving near the end of the week. This is a song that's really based on the blues. It's not one of his more well-known pieces. But listen, if you will, and see if you can grasp his sense and the musicians, his quartet. Which would be Elvin Jones on drum, McCoy Tyner on piano, and Jimmy Garrison on bass. And this is called Mr. Day, D-A-Y. It starts off with the bass player, if I can find it. Here we go. Heartbeat is set. And John has a much better tone than that. Thank you. stopped it right there. There are probably a lot of other songs I would have rather played for you, but that just happens to be the ones that I just downloaded onto my computer before I came here. Yeah, okay, so it's the muse. The source of our inspiration. So how do you plug into the muse? You just say, muse? How does it work? How does it happen?
You begin whatever, and it comes about.
And it comes about. Now, we can be inspired in many different ways, but I'm never going to pick up a French horn and be able to play anything inspired by the muse because I don't have the discipline of knowing how to play the French horn. It's the same thing. I can't be inspired by the muse to put a canvas in front of me and go to town and come up with a, but it takes some discipline. So you've got this discipline you've got to kind of craft over the years, and then as Georgiane says, you gotta listen, but yeah, where does it come from? Let me share with you a story, if I could. It's a true story. It was in the early 90s, and I had been doing a lot of work with Matthew Fox and Creation Spirituality and attending a lot of his conferences and hanging out with his musicians and doing a number of things. And I was with a gathering in at the Omega Institute in upstate New York. And, you know, during the afternoon there was some free time. And so I'm a real introvert, really, I am. I decided I would go out into the woods, and I grabbed my soprano sax, and I thought, I'm going to go out into the woods away from everybody, and I'm going to just play a little serenade to Mom, you know, Mother Nature. And, you know, I figured, yeah, that would be cool. So I went out there, walked and walked and walked, finally found this wonderful oak tree at the edge of a clearing. There were flowers there. It was just a gorgeous setting. And so I sat down, opened my case, pulled my horn out, put my horn to my lips, and I thought, you know, it's a little presumptuous of me to offer something up to Mother Nature at this point until I listen for her. So I thought I would just sit there for a while and take in the sounds and wonder of creation. So I sat there and I thought and I meditated. I was very silent and I was listening and I could hear the birds and the wind and the leaves. It was very peaceful, very restful. A little bit later, I picked up my horn and then I thought again. I said, you know, still kind of presumptuous of me to start blowing my horn. And I began to think that maybe there was one note. Maybe there was just one note that I should offer up to creation. And so I sat and I listened. And I tried to, as much as I could, become one with all of creation. And then slowly I put my horn to my lips and just waited and waited until at last this came out. Just a single solitary note. And I began to play it in as many different ways as I could, in different octaves, but only that one note. Soft, I played E flat for a long time. And I was tempted to pick up some fingers and go to some other notes, but I always kept it on E flat. That was it. So after a while of serenading Mother Nature with E flat and becoming one with the cosmos, I put my horn in my case and I headed back and had dinner. So afterwards, I was talking with Jim Conlon, who was one of the leaders of the group, and I noticed he had a necklace around his throat, and it was kind of a piece of wood, maybe with enamel on it, with the notation C sharp etched over the earth. I said, Jim, what's that all about? And he said, well, you know, just recently, physicists and cosmologists have discovered that the earth in its rotation vibrates and emits a tone, a hum, and it's C sharp. And I got all excited. I said, oh, Jim, you'll never guess what just happened. I went out in the woods. I was looking for the one note, and I got under the tree, and I got my horn, and I waited, and I waited, and I listened, and I listened, and I played, and I played, and I played E flat. And he goes, yeah. I said, you're not a musician, are you? He says, no. I said, well, this is a B-flat instrument. And when I play E-flat, the note that is sounding is D-flat, which is the same as
C-sharp.
Ooh, I got goosebumps again. Whenever I think of that, I get goosebumps. I went out searching for the one note of creation, and I found it. Now, I had a 1 in 12 chance of getting it right. Not very good odds, but you know, there it was. I can't explain how it happened, but it was the note, the right note. And to this day, that's probably one of the greatest moments of inspiration I've ever had on or off the bandstand. I'd like to play for you another piece. This is by a vocalist who has really come into his own these past couple of years. His name is Kurt Elling. Any of you know that name? You should. He's from Chicago, and I think he was voted by Downbeat as the best jazz vocalist last year. This guy went to Chicago Theological Seminary, went all the way through, was one course away from graduating, and said, I want to be a jazz musician. And that's what he's been doing. His music is deeply, profoundly theological in the broadest ecumenical interfaith sense. I'm going to play a little bit later this week something that is just incredible. But I'd like to play this number right now, and it's called, think of the E flat and C sharp, but it's called Higher Vibe, V-I-B-E, okay? And here's a couple of lines of his. Meditating on higher truths is living proof, shining in the light of God. So listen to this song, it's about 7 minutes long, and think about the source of inspiration and what we need to open ourselves to be the light of God. Higher Vibe. Live in me.
Higher vibe, set me free.
You can't hear that. Higher vibe, set me free.
Meditating on higher truths is creating.
I always pack too much into these sessions, so I'm going to stop this now during the solos. I hope the pianist Lawrence Hobgood doesn't mind. Just don't tell him I shut off his solo, okay? But jazz for me is deeply spiritual music. And so I want to turn now from creation to covenant. In the UCC, United Church of Christ, we're not a creedal church, we're a covenantal church. And so we rely on the covenant between God and us and each other. We have statements of faith, but we don't necessarily post them up and adhere to them. We're a very ornery, independent kind of group. And that works just fine for me. But covenants can get kind of dicey at times. But God made covenants in the Old Testament with who? Noah, Abraham, Moses, in a sense.
The Israelites,
the whole people. And Jesus then becomes the new covenant for us. A jazz group is a covenant. And for me, is one of the best representations of what the church should be all about. Let's just take a quartet. Piano, bass, drums, and sax. Okay? You've got four, usually guys, but not always, four musicians who sometimes may not have even met until they get to the bandstand. And they're supposed to play like they've been playing together for years. And, you know, somebody is given the permission to call a chart, a head, a song. And off they go. How do they get there? Well, it's the experience and, you know, you just kind of go there. But in the process, these four musicians are not just off doing their own thing. They're in ensemble. And so, you know, the bass player is listening very closely to the pianist. Pianist is laying down some chords, the bass player is going along, and sometimes the bass player kind of stretches out, the pianist hears that and kind of goes, okay, you know, I'll do this extension, this inversion, you know, I'll do this substitution. And, you know, you get the drummer going along, and the drummer, depending upon his or her style, you know, can change the whole feeling of the song one way or the other. And then pity the poor horn player out in front. I mean, you've got all this going on in back of you, and you've got to usually play the head, play the melody. But what happens in this process is that usually everybody gets a turn to solo, to be in the spotlight. Now, when you solo, what you do is you kind of take off all your clothes and you stand in front of the people and say, I'm going to go somewhere with this music that I've never been before and I don't know where it's going to be, but come along and I'm going to make myself really vulnerable. Now, there are some people out there, you know, in the clubs or wherever, sitting out there going, okay, where are you going to go? And they're just waiting for you to kind of play yourself into a corner, you know. And how are you going to get out of that one? And sometimes you don't. Sometimes you trip and you stumble and you fall. But you got the other musicians there kind of backing you up, keeping you going so you can try again. And when you're finished, you kind of fade back out of the spotlight. And the piano player starts doing a solo in the spotlight. So it's this way of community, of family, of people working together, trying to do something in common, trying to create, move in a direction, and then say, okay, Cliff, take it. It's yours. Preach the gospel. Share the faith. Play it in E flat. And it's yours. And then that's what you do. And then you kind of come back in and you say, hey, Paul, take it. It's yours. Go for it. And that's the beauty of this. What I'd like to do is play you a recent recording of my band, which is called Oikos, which is a Greek word. Well, I'll tell you, you can go look it up, but Oikos is a cool word. I'll tell you about it later.
How's it spelled?
O-I-K-O-S. That's the root. But it spreads out into many different areas. And it means ecumenical, economy, ecology. It's, at its root, it's an abode, it's a dwelling place. So anyway, this is a song called Contemplation. And this is a song by McCoy Tyner, who is the piano player for John Coltrane. And this was words were put to this by a friend of mine in Phoenix, Arizona, by the name of Chuck Moronic. And it's called Contemplation. And this is one of the signature songs that our band does all the time in jazz worship services. Let's see. Okay, here we go. Drummer starting to pick up, playing off the trumpet player here. Don't tell Chris that I cut him off too, okay? But that gives you an idea of going from one instrument to another. After the piano player, the bass player would come in. The drummer does the solo on this particular song, but then the vocalist comes back in, and then we kind of pull it and wrap it up together at the end.
Cliff, are there rules? Suppose you have a four-piece group without a vocalist. Are there rules or traditions about who takes the solo first, and who takes it second, and who takes the third? And
usually whoever the band leader is. The preacher gets to speak first. Traditionally, the horns take it.
Takes it first.
Yeah, but not all the time. And what jazz musicians do is they vary it. So because if it's always the sax player, then the trumpet player, then the piano player, and it becomes the same kind of thing. So what you want to do is you want to vary it and try different ways of doing it.
And can that be done right on the spot?
It's done on the spot all the time. You know, and what will happen is that one, you know, we kind of step back, you know, or depending upon, you know, there's one person who's usually pivoting around. There's usually a leader of the band. The best leaders are the ones who are the most humble, but there's a lot of eye contact, you know, going back and forth. And if a band plays together, you just kind of feel it, and somebody slips in and somebody slips out. It's amazing. If you've ever seen Wayne Shorter in concert with his group, he's the old guy with these young players, and they just go on and on, slipping in and out all over the place, and you know, it's intuitive.
So does the same thing ever happen more than once?
Well, you know, it can. I mean, if you're doing, for instance, we do a lot of jazz worship services. So if we do contemplation, depending upon how we're doing it, you know, it's done similarly. I mean, we may say, okay, Ariana, you sing a couple, I'll take a couple of verses, the piano will take it, then we'll take it on out, because we want it to be a shorter piece. Or sometimes we can stretch it out. But invariably, it's never played the same way twice.
And it could never be written down.
Well, it is written down. I mean, there's a melody, and there's chord structure. And some people go to great lengths to transpose. And, you know, they'll put the headphones on and they'll write down all the parts so that you two can play exactly the same way as so-and-so did on this number. And that's a good learning kind of thing, to be able to play those solos. But ultimately, you don't want to be a copycat, because somebody will just say, okay, this guy's mimicking Miles Davis or something like that.
Like a student who copied a famous painting. To learn how the light and the shadow and the line and everything, but
yeah, I mean, yes, you can. And then what you do is you break away from it.
So as far as the length of time, it's kind of by, you play a particular piece of music, it's by eye contact.
Yeah, and depending upon where you're playing, what you're playing for, who's in the audience, if they're awake or falling asleep or, you know, whatever, you kind of get a feeling for where you want to go. I mean, when John Coltrane would play, he didn't care. I mean, they would start a number and they'd be playing it 45 minutes later. I mean, he would be playing like crazy. They would take a break from the stand, he'd take his horn, and he'd go in the men's room and practice his scales. Then he'd come back out and they'd start another song and they would last for an hour. You know, and it was just, you know, pretty incredible. But that was him. Not many people can do that.
You said we were going to hear your daughter as a soloist. Is that her on this one?
Yes. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. So, what I was going to do next was take you into jazz in the church, and I was going to show you a song called Nature Boy. Anybody familiar with Nature Boy?
Nat King Cole.
Yeah, Nat King Cole did it. And it's a secular song, but it's a love song that if you listen to it, we use it in church all the time. But let me play you something that I think you'll recognize that gives you an example of how you can bring, I'm not going to say a tired old hymn at all. That's not what this is. But take a traditional hymn and breathe in a little bit of new life, and you'll recognize this.
except for the bass underneath. That's what you hear on Sunday morning from one instrument, maybe. Listen to the bass player. Syncopation. It's hard to sing along with this. Our time is up. I'm just going to let this play, and you can stay or you can wander out and head over to Vespers. But this is the kind of music and form that just really inspires me and turns me on and becomes a form of prayer for me. And being able to share this in a worship setting, you know, one can argue that this is performance. But if you go to a jazz club and you look around to the people listening to the jazz players, what are they doing? Their head's going, feet are going, right? You know, and so there's, it's a similar thing happens to when the preacher is preaching. Okay? That could be performance too. The preacher's up there preaching, you're listening, but the best preaching is when the audience is participating, at least in spirit, you know, and they're hanging on every word, and they're investing themselves, and they're taking the thoughts that are being expressed. It's the same thing with the music, too. And if you can get into that, put yourself into it, there's this very rich communication and dynamic that happens. Even when the bass player plays real soft. I know that's too soft for you to hear.
Yeah.
But now he's back to the vamp.
All I can think of is Jack Lemmon and Some Like It Hot.
Yeah. Now it goes back to the melody. Say, hey folks, yeah, remember what we were doing? This is it. This is the root of it all. Sure.
The beginning of his story after he's wound around Rowlinson's barn.
Wandering.
Yeah. Thank you all.
Thank you.